Welcome to Modern Family Matters, a podcast hosted by Steve Altishan, our Director of Client Partnerships here at Landerholm Family Law. We are devoted to exploring topics within the realm of family law that matter most to you. Our discussions will cover a wide range of both legal and personal issues that encompass family law matters. We strongly believe that life events such as marriages, divorces, remarriages, births, adoptions, children growing up, growing older, illnesses, and deaths do not dissolve a family. Rather, they provide the opportunity to reconfigure and strengthen family dynamics in healthy and positive ways. With expertise from qualified attorneys and professional guests, we hope that our podcast will help provide answers, clarity, and guidance towards a better tomorrow for you and your family. Without further ado, your host, Steve Altishan.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our Facebook live broadcast. I'm Steve Altishan, Director of Client Partnerships here at Landerholm Family Law. Today, I'm here with Certified Behavioral Analyst Chris Messina to talk about how to manage high-conflict co-parenting relationships and avoid bleak outcome for your kids. So, Chris, for those who have not seen you on our earlier conversations, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Hey, Steve. I am a behavior analyst, and I focus on co-parenting for kids with special needs like autism and ADHD. So I work with the whole family unit, parents, as well as doing behavioral therapy for the kids.
Thank you. Well, today's topic is quite a mouthful. So let's start with what constitutes high conflict and high conflict co-parenting relationships. Where do we start? I mean, I've heard this term high conflict personalities. What's that all about?
Well, if you're involved in a high conflict co-parenting relationship, you know it. I think central to those relationships is blame. I kind of think of it as a blame-shame cycle, the blame-shame game, you know, where there is a lot of finger-pointing, a lot of assigning responsibility, and not a whole lot of accountability for maybe a particular parent's role in anything really involving the kids. So we've got blame. Typically, there is aggressive communication in the form of threats to maybe take legal action or to withhold certain, you know, things the other parent might need. Yelling. You get the gist of where I'm going with this aggressive communication, right? So blame. Control is another issue that I often see, an inability to relinquish control or try and wield control, you know, in similar patterns that maybe were present in the marriage.
So this high conflict, is it like a high conflict person? Is it something that's sort of built into this person and then just comes out especially awful during a divorce or afterwards?
Is it built in? That's a great question. Listen, I think, right, lots of variables contribute to the person we become, right? So that's a conversation for another Facebook Live. But typically, yes, this is the way this person engages, likely in most relationships in their lives. It's seen more often in those intimate relationships, right? We kind of open ourselves at home in a way that we might not elsewhere. But I would be willing to bet if you are a truly high conflict individual, it is not isolated to just your marital or divorced relationship. You're seeing it in the workplace, potentially with other family members and, you know, even friendships. So a high conflict individual carries themselves everywhere they go.
How does it sort of play out in the interaction that ex-spouses have, you know, with their children? I'm assuming it's got to have some negative impact with the children.
Yes, hence the name of today, right? The idea of bleakonomics, which we'll talk about. When someone is truly wedded to winning, right? And I'm not talking about in a sporting event, I'm talking about in any kind of communication or negotiation with a co-parent. When you are wedded to winning and not open to problem solving, the outcomes, I mean, help me find a good outcome there, right? Yeah. So we're going to talk at length about more specifics regarding the negative outcomes. But when you're fighting to win or fighting period, your kids are going to be deeply impacted by that.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because when we were talking, when we were kind of planning this, I know that you used a term and it struck me. And you said trickle down bleakonomics. Well, I'm an old economics major, and I remember that term, trickle down economics. And in the old trickle down economics, basically it was, the more of something that those at the top of the pyramid accumulate, well, the more of that trickles down to those at the bottom. Well, in economics, that was supposed to be the case of wealth. But I'm thinking that trickle-down bleakonomics has something much less desirable that's trickling down to the kids. So maybe we could go through some examples of how high conflict co-parenting ultimately hurts the children. Maybe some examples of what this trickle-down bleakonomics is.
I got to pat myself on the back. That's a pretty creative one, isn't it?
If I may say that.
But here's how I arrived there. And I know we kind of talked about this a little bit, and I'd like our listeners to hear, because a big part of my job is to learn from the kids and their experience in these complicated family dynamics. And I can tell you in no uncertain terms that even if a parent deludes themselves into thinking that this scathing email that I write to my co-parent won't impact the kids, or the feelings I harbor against my co-parent will remain largely unknown by my children, so how could it possibly affect them?
Right.
I'm here to set the record straight with you today, because I have seen the evidence time and time again. And these examples are going to just illustrate ways in which we really do fool ourselves as divorced parents if we truly think that I can be operating from a place of anger, resentment, contempt, and think that it will not trickle down in many ways, not just in a singular way. And we'll look at how all of that kind of creates. And so I started to envision that, hence the trickle-down bleakonomics, because I thought these are bleak outcomes for kids, and they actually can be avoided if we make positive co-parenting choices. So let's take a look at a couple of examples. So a behavioral pattern that I think is really devastating is poor communication. Okay, so very often a high conflict parent will make the decision, and it's a decision, to either not respond to their co-parent or to really drag out and delay in an intentional way a response that really should be made in a timely, manner. So that communication, right? We see the control. We see how all of those negative feelings are just kind of manifesting in the way that we communicate. So, we say, okay, so how does my lack of response to my ex, either on a text or an email, how could that possibly impact my kids, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I think a lot of us think that, right? Like, how are they going to know?
Exactly.
Right. So, okay. So let's take a look at we've got a flow chart here, right? So we're going to talk about our friends, Kim and Pat. They're a divorced couple. Okay. So Pat refuses in this scenario to respond to Kim's emails about an upcoming activity. She wants to sign the kids up for a camp. Okay. So we all know as parents, like, you got to get on it, like really, really early, right? So she reaches out and says, hey, I'd like to kind of get your approval, assuming they've got joint custody. They're going to make these decisions together. She's kind of extending this bid for communication. And Pat just says, no, I'm just going to, he's angry and he's not going to respond. Okay. So now Kim can't plan.
Right.
Right. Because so for many people, it is required that you have the decision made by both parents. Yep. So now Kim can't plan. And so she has to hit the pause button. And we know with children, planning is of the essence. And so now kids are going to miss out on an opportunity, right? So it kind of trickles down. And even though you thought, I'm just going to annoy my ex, by not responding, now your kids have missed out on an opportunity because something has filled up and that, you know, that chance has gone away. Okay.
It's too late for them to go to camp.
Exactly. Right. So let's think about, why did Kim reach out in the first place? We're going to give Kim the benefit of the doubt. And we're going to say she's trying to collaborate, right? So she's trying to work with the other parent to say, hey, let's make the best choices together. I don't want to just, you know, sign them up unilaterally. I want this to be a shared experience. Like, yay, great. We want that. So if, you know, Pat doesn't respond and Kim has the authority in that situation to make the decision, and then she signs them up, well, then Pat later responds and says, oh no, I'm going to fight that. I wasn't part of that decision, right? So now, because Pat dragged his heels, Kim went ahead, she took the lead, she made the decision, and now Pat's like, no. And so now we've got to either withdraw kids, again, another missed opportunity, or more transitions. Like, who knows, like, what the outcome, but we know it's not going to be good for the kids, right? And then there's that increase in tension. So the minute you increase your co-parent stress, I actually challenge folks to find one good outcome from increasing your other parent, right? Like, I can sit here with you. We could probably list like 912, right? Negative outcomes. Can you think of one positive outcome that arises from increasing your co-parent stress?
No.
Right, like not a single one, not a single good outcome. Yeah. So now, you know, Kim's stressed out, right? So when you are stressed out as a single parent, like, the children feel it, right? So you're going to be short-tempered. You're going to be exhausted. I mean, the kids are going to be deeply impacted when you have a stress.
Yeah, stress doesn't trickle down. Stress gushes down.
Gushes down. I know. That's a great point. It's truth. It's truth. And so you think, okay, so it's my responsibility as the co-parent to recognize that all of these things are going to gush down and flood my kids. Okay. So communication, like let's get real. Communication should be timely and should be respectful. Okay. So another way, should we jump into a second scenario, or do you want to?
Yes, oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, already we have the result to kids from just communication, you know, less opportunities, less stability, having to, you know, change plans and more stress. Well, those aren't good.
Not good. You know, because we all know that stress leads to also a whole lot of poor outcomes with our health as well. Right. So let's talk about finances, because I think another way that high conflict parents like to kind of tangle is by refusing to participate financially in something that maybe isn't required in the decree, right? So I'm clearly not a family lawyer, but I know some decrees will maybe specify extracurriculars and some will not, and camps are, you know, they're going to look different, I'm imagining, right? So here is an opportunity for the kids. Let's say it's a really great musical theater experience for a kid. We all know kids are not cheap. So this is going to be an expense that maybe in this situation, Pat really wants. We're back to Kim and Pat. Pat really wants, you know, his daughter to engage in this opportunity. So Kim, because she is operating from a place of, let's assume there's some contempt here, has says, no, I'm not paying. Even though Pat in this scenario needs Kim's financial input, okay, to make this happen, to make this really important opportunity happen for their child, her financial contribution is necessary, right? So Kim just says, nope.
Yeah, I'm
in control, nope. She thinks she's saying no to Pat, but who is she really saying no to?
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I'm coming saying no, you know, it's not in the decree. It's not in our parenting plan. You pay for
it. Right. Because presumably in Kim's mind, she thinks, I'm not giving money to you, Pat. I don't want to give money to you, Pat. Right. But in reality, you're helping Pat make this opportunity happen for your kid. Okay. Yep. So now Pat has some choices. So Pat, in this scenario, his finances are stretched thin. So now in order to make this opportunity happen, which let's assume he really wants this for his daughter, he's going to have to work more hours, right? Or he's going to have to double down and work harder. So what does that do for the kids? Now I've got less time. And every time you increase your workload as a parent, your stress is going up. So now the kids are getting a grouchier parent and reduced quality time together. right? So trickled right down. Now your kids, right? So the other alternative would be Pat just can't. There's no way for him with the type of job that he has. There's no way for him to make up that difference financially. So his daughter's just simply not going to, you know, get to engage. And the thing that is really concerning about that is, sure, sometimes extracurriculars are fun and games. It's like, anybody have a soccer kid who you're like, my kid shouldn't be playing soccer? I have one of those kids. Not every extracurricular is really enriching deeply the lives of our kids, but some of them are, especially as kids get older. If you're nurturing a musical talent or, you know, something in that area, like the stakes get higher, right? Like you actually may miss opportunities that have a long-term consequence for your kid. Okay. So that's important to keep in mind, right? It's different when you've got a little kid running around a soccer field and maybe someone who's, you know, playing a violin and nurturing the skill. And again, every single scenario here is going to lead to that increased stress, period. And so if I think about some of the ways that that increased stress is going to impact Pat and Kim, you know, how's the kid going to see that? Well, sometimes when parents go to maybe like a sporting event or a play or a musical event, even in high conflict situations, maybe they'll sit near each other to sort of have that united front presented for the kid, right? So now you're ticked off at each other. We're not sitting near each other, okay? The tension becomes more palatable. Maybe I'm not walking to the door anymore to pick you up. Maybe I'm going to wait in the car. Those little microaggressions are very, very clear to the kids. That tension is palatable. And I'm not just saying it from an adult perspective. This is what the kids tell me. They know it. Listen, I once read something that said, you can fool a lot of people on this earth, you can't fool children. And I think it's true. They are the most perceptive. We have a lot to learn from them. So finances, choose carefully. So,
and again, it's a matter of, you know, I'll punish, you know, my spouse, and you're punishing your kids.
Absolutely. That's a great word for it. A lot of this behavior at its very core is punishing. You think you're punishing your ex? And we're going to talk more in a bit about what to do, but I just want to sort of make this public service announcement here. You're not married anymore. You're done. You're divorced. Like, what are you fighting for? And I understand that that's a lot of work, but we should be doing the work to figure out how to move past. But sometimes people behave in such a way that I have to remind them, you're not married anymore. You actually separated your lives. This is the good news for you, right? Like you get to go on, you know, so let's tuck that one away. So the third piece, the third scenario that I see often is a real rigidity when it comes to time. So for example, you know, we've all got our parenting plans, and someone once told me that the best parenting plan, you could tell me if this is what family lawyers feel, is one that's really, really detailed, but put in a drawer, just so that if we ever need to refer to it, we have to, but we're going to be adults about this and we're going to work together organically, right? Like that sounds great. I'm not sure, but right. So you've got this granular plan, but in reality, you say to yourselves, but we're going to be flexible. We're going to roll with it. So if kids, you know, things happen, kids get sick and parents get sick and all sorts of things pop up. I don't know about you, but I don't see that actually happen in high conflict situations, right? So when it comes to time flexibility, so let's talk about Pat and Kim again, right? So Pat, Kim needs to go to a doctor's appointment. It's a pretty urgent medical appointment, right? She doesn't want to bring the kids for myriad reasons. And so it's her parenting time. This is the only time that she can get into this doctor's appointment. She says to Pat, hey, I need a hand, right? Knowing that he's available at this time. Certainly if he's at work, what's he going to do? But knowing he's available, she reaches out and says, hey, could I bring the kids by for a couple of hours, right? While I'm at this doctor's appointment. Obviously in this scenario, Pat says no. So, how does this affect the kids, right? Who cares, right? Like they're just going to go to a doctor's appointment and sit with mom. Okay. So if we look at protecting kids, we want to make sure that we are considering where they are developmentally and exposing them to what's safe and appropriate for them to know. And in this scenario, it really sounds like Kim is in a situation that the kids don't need to be privy to, right? Yep. So she now has to make choices that are really difficult for a single parent to make. So she has to decide, do I leave the kids home with my neighbor who they don't really know and feel safe with? Do I bring them to sit in a waiting room while all sorts of questions arise in their mind? I mean, really, wouldn't Pat enjoy getting a few hours on a Saturday if he's got it to be with his kids? We all know that's about Kim. That's not about his kids.
Yep, that's the old 70s term. He's on a power trip.
Yep. So, you know, I think a lot of tension is inherent in all of these scenarios. And again, I go back to the question, can we identify a single positive outcome for kids?
Right.
In any of these scenarios? Right.
No.
And are we, if we're really honest with ourselves as parents, are we making decisions that are in the best interest of the kids? You know your motivations. You may want to run from them, right? But you know your motivations.
Right.
Sure. So, got to get honest.
Yeah. And you know, like you've shown us not just the mental, the emotional, the, you know, just convenience damage. And, you know, you've shown us there's health, there's job. I mean, there's a long-term, you know, significant real damage going on to everybody.
Right.
It's probably been going on to the person who's doing it.
And oh,
it's ridiculous.
Absolutely. We shared a quote the other day that said something like, resentment is a poison you drink, hoping the other person will die.
Yep.
You are doing a whole lot of damage, right? Whole lot of damage. So here's the thing. So when you are rigid, when you are inflexible, you know, you do create obstacles for that other parent. So for example, a parent says to you, hey, I've got an invitation to go see a family member with maybe a significant other that they've, you know, got to earn a relationship with currently. And the other parent says, no, that's my weekend. I won't switch. When in reality, they could switch, no problem. Well, you know what? You may think, I don't want my ex to have a new relationship. I'm not going to make that easy for him or her. Guess what? It's actually really healthy for that ex-partner to have emotional support in their lives. And if you keep creating that blockade so that they can't nurture it, there's another negative outcome for your kids, because potentially there could be another really supportive individual that may not be able to remain in their lives, right? Because the ex parent has not been flexible. So
these are bad things. These are, you know, terrible results. This is the result caused by, you know, this sort of action. How do we get out of it? How do we, you may not ever make it stop, but how do we work through it?
Yeah. I want to share really clearly some strategies for folks to try. Before I do that, I just want to make one comment, because a mom recently said to me that she felt like this was all useless to her because her ex was unwilling to come to the table and do this work with her.
Right.
So I want to be clear that it's optimal if both co-parents say, hey, we're going to do this work. We're going to commit to all the things we're about to talk about, right? We're going to like own it and we're going to deep dive into this together. It's also possible that you may have such a high conflict ex, so high conflict that the work necessary for that person to sort of join the game with you is their responsibility and they're unwilling to do it. Okay. So you can still do this work, because I believe, right, that we can maybe compensate is too strong of a word, but we can certainly provide different models for our kids that, yeah, well, optimally they'd see it from both angles. One is okay too. Just because they're not willing to meet you doesn't mean you can't make the good parenting choices. Okay. I just want to be clear about that.
Well, you know, what do you say to someone who says, hey, hold on. You know, I put up with this when I was married. I had to, you know, I had to do that for the kids when I was married. I had to, that was a relationship that, you know, I was really trying to preserve and make better, but this is divorce.
Right.
Ain't the same. Right. How do you respond?
Well, that I would share the Bleakonomics theory. My Bleakonomics, I don't know, write a theory. Because the truth is, if you did not have children together, fine, go your own way. You have nothing binding you. But kids are an incredibly powerful glue, okay? So here's what I argue. So while we all made probably some very poor choices in our marriages, this is an opportunity to like finally do it right. Okay. And so I'm going to make an argument that probably won't be super popular amongst divorce folks, but I believe it to be true for the kids. I believe that your co-parenting relationship is the most important relationship of your life. Not your new partner, not your kid, because your kids are going to reap so many benefits if that relationship is strong and respectful. Listen, as we kind of move through these, you'll see I'm not suggesting that you have to adore your ex. None of that is required. It's letting go of the past and keeping the spotlight on the kids. Okay, so let's talk. Okay. So, yeah. So first and foremost, it is attempting, and I want to say attempting because I know it'll be really hard for folks, but attempting to accept that that relationship is paramount. Okay. All relationships that are important, that you want to maintain, that you want to flourish, they're going to take work, right? That's like psych 101. This is going to take work. So you're either going to do the work or you're not. Until you commit to doing the work, the rest of this won't be super valuable to you, but I hope that folks will be willing to get to that place, whatever that looks like for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's counterintuitive, but it's correct.
Yep. So, okay, so these are four commitments that I would strongly encourage individuals to try really hard to make, okay? So the first is, I think a lot of times in divorce scenarios, folks feel like they need to forgive and they can't forgive, so they can never move past. But I read something recently that kind of stopped me in my tracks, and it was all about finding resolution, not forgiveness. Okay. And I want to share a quote because he captured it so perfectly. This author, Jeff Brown, I don't know who he is, but I want to meet him. He said, "Forgiveness is not a measure of our emotional health and well-being. Resolution is. That is how we come to a relatively resolved understanding of what we went through, how we come to terms with what it was in a way that brings us to a deeper understanding and peace." I know that maybe sound a little flowery and, you know, woohoo, but to me, I thought, that's it. I hear time and again, I won't forgive, so I can't move forward. I won't forgive, so we can't have a good relationship. What they did was unforgivable, right? I think resolution looks a whole lot different than forgiveness. What do you think?
Well, you resolve yourself that it is unforgivable, but it shouldn't stop me.
And doing that work, usually it's through some kind of therapeutic intervention. It's a different path for everybody, but whatever that work looks like, if we don't find resolution, I think we're stuck. We're mired in the emotional muck and we just can't seem to like do the next few steps that we're going to recommend. Okay. So that's the first piece. And it's a huge one, but if you can commit to finding resolution, I think there is a whole lot of hope for a good relationship with your co-parent. The next one is also going to be tricky. And I'm going to say, pick one of the greatest irritants that really plagued you with your ex and let it go. I thought pick the greatest irritant. That might be too big of an ask, but there are things about our ex that will irritate us, right? All the live long day. There are reasons why you're divorced, right? We know this. If you can identify one and commit to letting it go, I think that's going to move the needle in terms of developing this relationship. Again, I come back to my PSA. We're not married anymore, folks. Right? Like we did it. You separated your lives. You don't have to hold on. It's almost as though people sometimes in divorce behave as if they're still married. It's like, well, hang on a second. You just separated your entire worlds. You have limited contact. You have to see this person every day. Let it go.
It's a great tangible thing that someone can do.
Yes, pick one. Identify it. Name it. What is it? Exactly. What are you willing to let go of?
Yeah. And it's like, okay, now it's, you know, it's not a game, but it's like I said, it's tangible. It's like, okay, I can take some of this power back because this is a thing I do and I choose to do it. Don't let it bother me. Do what I'm supposed to do. And I got that one out of the way. You know, it's demonstrable, I guess.
It is. And, you know, you can see as we kind of chip away at this, that this is work that an individual can do absent their co-parent doing it.
Yep.
You get to do this work for yourself, right? Yep. So we're gonna kind of let go of one of those irritants. The next one is number three, be open to influence from your ex. We talked about those high conflict relationships. I'm here to win. And it's this dance and I will up the ante and I will, right? Be open to influence. Because otherwise, your only other alternative, if you're not open to influence, which is really collaborative problem solving, when you're open to making those decisions and hearing what they have to say and maybe changing your mind, your alternative is to win. Do you want to be right or do you want to do what's best for your kids? And believe it or not, the other parent knows these kids too. He or she may have some great ideas for how to problem solve. But if you enter a conversation with that desire to win, might as well exit the conversation immediately. Why bother?
You know, the deal, don't cut off your nose to spite your face.
And number four, in terms of these commitments to yourself, feels huge to me. Feels monumentally huge to me. And I think it's game changing. I think you need to find some modicum of compassion for your ex. Compassion, why? Right. So you can, I see two paths when you leave a marriage. You can operate with that anger, which presumably flooded your relationship while you were married, right? That anger, that contempt, that disdain. And you can let that carry you. That's one river, right? You can go down. The other alternative is to say, this person is human. I see the humanity in this person. I've chosen not to live with it, which is great. Okay, so now you have protected yourself and you are safe and all of the things that you needed or whatever. But this is a human being who I think deserves compassion. So for example, if they are ill, feel compassion, right? If they are struggling, if they lose their job. I mean, this is a human being. And I think when we are so entangled in marriage and the rage feels so real for a lot of people, they forget that you can feel compassion. And I think compassion is the other alternative. Let's go down that river. It's the hardest work you will do, most likely, but I think it's the most impactful.
And it's something you do that has no real reflection of the anger. You know, it's like, I think you've talked to me about, you know, creating a moment of connection. You know, we're at a game, let's take a selfie and send it to them.
Yeah.
You know, not with the, you know, oh, look what we're doing, or, you know, just something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And see, again, this cycles back to seeing this as a valuable relationship. If you don't see it as valuable and super important, you're not going to do these things. So let's start there. Okay. So those are the commitments. You're going to commit to making this significant, and you're going to explore compassion and resolution. Okay. So now I want to go to a quick list of do's and don'ts, because I feel like it's really valuable for parents to walk away with things to actually try. Right. So
I like
this is good. Okay. So do, all right, we're going to just do respond in a timely manner. Just do it. Right. We all know that every human being walks around with a device on which they can respond, right? 24/7. So when someone says, I didn't have my phone, it's like, well, I'm pretty sure it's glued to you. So just respond, right? Don't purposefully avoid communication unless you want to have like a whole host of negative outcomes. Okay. I had a parent tell me the other day, I just simply stopped responding. I blanket just stop responding. I said, okay, let's talk about what that's going to yield, right? Okay. Yeah. And then we do it. I get it. Right. But let's, we're big kids. Yeah. Okay.
And so, don't block them out. So that's your number one do. Respond in a timely manner.
Like it's like low hanging fruit. Just do it. Right.
Yeah, and again,
your boundaries. Some people say no text messaging. Fine. But establish your kind of rules between each other and then just do it. Set a clear objective every single time you communicate, because otherwise I think the don't is, don't sabotage conversations by, you know, maybe kitchen sinking where you dump everything in, or getting sort of going to the past and getting to the insults and the low blows. Set an objective. So if you're going to email each other and say, I'd like to talk, and like try to talk sometimes, because it's the most effective way, if you can be calm, to communicate. But, you know, set it, even if it's an email exchange, set an objective. Today we're talking about Sarah's dental issue. So for example, in the response, it shouldn't be, well, you're feeding Sarah a whole bunch of candy and junk food, so obviously it's your fault, right? Let's not do that. Stay to the topic. So the objective is, we are going to decide on an orthodontist for Sarah in this message. Be clear.
It seems like you have to listen more when you do that as well. I mean, you're not waiting to set the bomb. You're not looking for the way to light
the match. Exactly. Stay on track. It's so easy to just veer off and then forget it. Then it devolves and we know the rest. Okay.
That was number two.
That was number two. So one, respond in a timely manner. Two, set those clear objectives. Three, pause. Just pause sometimes. That doesn't mean drag out 3 weeks before you respond to the email, but pause before you respond so you don't react. Pause before you make a decision so that you recognize, I'm making this decision because I really don't want to see that other person happy in the dating situation, or I'm making this decision so that my kids, you know, have some opportunity. You know why you're making that decision. Pause and get real with yourself. Are you doing it because you want to spite the other person? Are you doing it because it's really best for the kids? Okay. Impulsive reactions off the table. Just stop. Okay.
Yep.
And so what's that?
I was going to say this is so much more important than it was. You know, I keep referring to my age, but back in the good old days, because the ability to react quickly, the ability to make a decision instantaneously and get that out to people isn't around now. You know, I remember telling my kids, hold on, you're going to send that text, put your phone down, wait 30 seconds, look at it again, and then see if you want to send it.
Yep. Sleep on it. I know, you're right. It's all of the, we have access to so many ways to sort of arrest our impulsivity. Okay. So number four, this was four. We talked about being open to influence, be open, do try and collaborate. When it comes to problem solving, try to be open, even if it's the most painful thing you've done, and don't make no your default, right? When no is your default, there's no room for ever hearing, hey, I'm concerned about our kids, X, Y, or Z, their anxiety. Can we talk about, you know, getting them some help? Nope. Doors are slammed. Don't make no your default. Okay. And I think just overall, as we kind of look at everything in total today, I do honor those four commitments or make some version for yourself. If that sounded like hokey to you and you thought you're right, no chance, come up with like training wheel versions. Make a commitment. Make one commitment. Just make a commitment and try and honor it. Don't read the parenting books and say, I'm going to watch this and learn this, and then just pay lip service to those ideas. Right. Make a commitment. That's how behavior change happens. You have to commit.
I love that. And it takes you away from just reacting all the time. You know, it allows you to be proactive. And I think people who are proactive tend to think clearer sometimes. So this was really cool. I'm afraid we're running out of time, as we always do when we talk, but it was great. And so, you know, Chris, I really want to thank you for joining us today. This was really...
You are so welcome. And I just want to make sure that as we say our goodbyes, that we remember, like, you don't have to have those bleak outcomes, right? Bleakonomics doesn't mean it's a guarantee. If you choose positive co-parenting choices for the kids.
Yeah.
Boy, it's
what you've done is you've shown us, you know, the result of not doing the right thing or not acting in a, you know, an appropriate way. And, you know, what can be the result if you do? And it's stark. I mean, the difference can be stark. I think it's great. I think it's great. Any other last minute words of wisdom?
Just own it. Just own your behavior, right? Like, just, and remember, you're no longer married, so you get to behave in ways that we grow and.
So I like that one. I do like that one. So thanks, Chris. And also everyone who's tuned in, I really want to thank you again for watching our Facebook Live today. And if anyone has any questions on today's topic, I know that we've got it posted where you can get a hold of Chris in our Facebook. You can also post it to us on our Facebook, and you can also shoot me an email at steve@landerhomelaw.com. So until next time, everyone stay safe, have a great day, and we'll see you at our next Facebook Live. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to Modern Family Matters, a legal podcast focusing on providing real answers and direction for individuals and families as they navigate the growths, changes, and challenges of creating their new family dynamics. Modern Family Matters is sponsored by Landerholm Family Law, serving Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. and devoted to providing clients with compassionate and fierce legal advocacy, with a firm belief in the importance of upholding the family unit amidst complex transitions. If you are in need of legal counsel or have additional questions about a family law matter important to you, you can visit our Landerholm Family Law website at www.landerholmlaw.com or call us at 503-227-0200 to schedule a case evaluation with one of our seasoned attorneys. Modern Family Matters, advocating for your better tomorrow and offering solutions on legal matters important to the modern family.